Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities. There's a reason why the concept of visualization is so popular. Some experts believe that if you believe something strongly enough, you can will it into existence. That new car or a raise at work. As former Disney employee Tom Fitzgerald once said, if you can dream it, you can do it. Alexandra David Neal had lofty dreams too, which she managed to will into an exciting life of her own. Born into poverty in 1868, her childhood was spent exploring spaces not meant for women at the time. When she was 15 years old, she attempted a journey to England from the Netherlands, foiled only by her lack of funds. Over the next several years, she did make it to England, and Spain, and Switzerland, all without anyone's help. She had a passion for joining secret societies as well, any that would take her, including the Freemasons, of which her father had been a member. During this time, she also studied subjects like anarchy and feminism, converted to Buddhism, and trained to become an opera singer. She even performed as first singer at the Hanoi Opera House in Vietnam. Over the years, Alexandra dove deep into many subjects, but none as important to her as Buddhism. Her devotion to it took her to India and Tibet many times, and she published several books on her travels, as well as on religious mysticism. One of those books came out in 1929. It was quickly translated from its original French into English as Magic and Mysticism in Tibet. Inside it, Alexandra discussed a certain spiritual phenomenon known as a sprulpa, which she referred to as a tulpa. According to Alexandra, a tulpa was a manifestation of will and energy brought into the real world. She had witnessed many fantastic things throughout her life, but nothing like what she had seen during one night in Tibet in 1929. Alexandra had hired a Tibetan man named Wang Du to assist her in carrying her luggage and hauling supplies. Once she'd set up camp and gotten settled, Wang Du left to be with his family for a three-week sabbatical. While he was away, he was also supposed to collect more food and supplies for the camp and bring back additional workers to aid Miss David Neal. 3 weeks turned into a month, which turned into 2 months, and there was still no sign of Wang Du. Alexandra figured he'd abandon her to stay with his family at home, until one night when she had a dream of him traveling up the hill wearing a sun hat, which he'd never had before. The next day, another servant rushed into her tent claiming that he saw Wang Du approaching. She ran out to see for herself, and there he was, wearing the same hat as in her dream, but without any of the supplies or workers that he had been tasked with bringing. She and two other servants watched him for a while as he climbed up the hill. At one point, he was obscured by a chorten, a small circular structure meant for prayer and meditation. Alexandra and the servants kept their eyes on the spot. Maybe he'd stop to pay his respects or take a break. They waited for some time before Alexandra told the servants to go to the chorten and check behind it for him. Looking through a pair of binoculars, she finally got her answer. Wang Du had disappeared. Hours passed, and no one could understand how or why the man had evaporated into thin air. Then, just as the sun was setting over the camp, he reappeared. And he wasn't a mirage this time either. A caravan of supplies and additional servants trailed behind him, and on top of his head, he was wearing that sun hat Alexandra had seen in her dream. As soon as he reached the camp, she interrogated him and the new servants on their whereabouts earlier that day. According to their stories, as well as the stories of people who'd met the caravan along the way, Wang Du and the workers had been nowhere near the hill prior to dusk. The only explanation Alexandra could come up with was that both her dream and the vision everyone saw of Wang Du traveling alone up the hill had been a tulpa, a manifestation of their will and energy, but not one created by her. It had to have been made by Wang Du himself to let them know that he was on his way, which is something I'm sure you'd all agree is more than a little curious. There's an allure to the idea of a secret recipe, isn't there? Colonel Sanders famously refused to tell anyone the 7 herbs and spices that made his fried chicken so popular. John Pemberton's formula for Coca-Cola is locked inside a steel vault, the contents of which are known only to a select few employees. And McDonald's famous secret sauce, that yellowy substance drizzled on its Big Macs, was a trade secret for years before the recipe was revealed by the company in 2012. When it comes to beloved products, it often comes down to a key ingredient or a combination of them that makes them so coveted. One such ingredient has been used for centuries all over the world, and its origins are not what anyone would expect. In September of 2012, a young boy in the UK stumbled upon it on the beach with his father. Before that, the Ming Dynasty would have imported it from Africa and Sri Lanka. Henry V, Nostradamus, and legendary lover Casanova believed it was imbued with special qualities, especially in the romance department. But where did this miracle substance originate? Whales. Sperm whales, to be exact. Only 1% of the 350,000 sperm whales in existence managed to produce it, and the process is not exactly pretty. When a sperm whale eats its favorite food, squid, the body of the ingested animal gets pushed through the whale's intestines and 4 stomachs with no problem. The beak, though, goes on a more troublesome journey. That beak, which is slightly curved and pointed on the end, scrapes along the whale's insides. It carves out pieces of the intestinal lining, which is collected along with feces as it travels. The resulting mass is so dense the whale can't digest it, and anything caught behind it can't pass through the rectum either. To alleviate the pressure building inside, the whale's lower intestines take in more water, but the process doesn't loosen the rock-like beak. Instead, the mass just hardens further. Now, in some cases, the whale manages to pass the beaky buildup on its own. Most of the time, though, it doesn't see the light of day until that whale has died, freed from its biological prison by the process of decomposition. But it's not just the whale that makes this concentration of squid beaks and feces so special. It's the ocean itself. If the substance is harvested directly from a dead whale, it has a dark, thick, and mucus-like consistency. It's only when exposed to the briny deep that it becomes such a beloved and valuable commodity. People have done pretty absurd things to obtain this stuff over the years. One man in 1891 crawled through the neck of a dead sperm whale that had washed ashore. He wormed his way through its intestines until he was able to pry the large stone free. Today, hunters along shorelines keep their eyes peeled for objects that look like rocks or petrified dog droppings in the hopes of discovering a chunk for themselves. And they're way more knowledgeable about poop than anyone probably should be. According to those who have found this special brand of whale excrement, the scent can be woodsy, like fresh air mixed with a healthy dose of manure. But there is a reason people go crazy looking for the fecal remnants of sperm whales. The monetary value. The mass that that young English boy and his father found in 2012, it was worth a whopping $63,000. Another 2.5-pound piece was found in 2015, and it was sold for over $14,000. Why such big bucks for undigested squid beaks? Because of how they're used. What has been considered everything from an aphrodisiac to a superfood, to an additive to cigarettes to make them smell better, is also the main ingredient in perfume. Its official name is ambergris, and if you've ever spritzed yourself with Chanel No. 5 before a night on the town, then you've undoubtedly been exposed to the secret ingredient in some of your favorite aromas. And if you're thinking this all sounds too strange, and maybe too gross to be true, I'm sorry to say it's not. This tale does, in fact, pass the smell test. I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show, and you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.